Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham. An amazing and encouraging baptism, and an equally amazing and encouraging sermon on wisdom. I have to say that in case Graham listens to the podcast. He's a delicate man. That's our Sunday roundup this week. And then in the main section, we have such a good and helpful chat with Duncan Forbes, a London pastor seeking to reach people around the Alton estate with the gospel. Duncan helps us think through classism in the church, and he challenges us to think about our preconceptions around class. How can we be better at sharing the gospel with everyone in our communities? Enjoy the podcast. I'll see you on the other side.
I'm Mark Ventham.
And I'm Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back to the podcast. We've got some exciting things today. We've got a guest coming up later, but before that, we've got our regular feature, which is our Sunday Roundup.
Sunday Roundup, show, did the sermon pass real slow? Did you plant some seed to grow? It's Roundup time, what do you know?
Okay, so Sunday was a particularly exciting one because we had a baptism, which is our first baptism, I guess, since the whole lockdown situation happened. Hard to do baptisms during lockdown, isn't it? But this one went really well. Graham, do you want to talk about it? Because you were running the service. Thoughts on Sunday?
Not only that it was great testimony, really, really thoughtful. It was pre-recorded, but that kind of worked really well because we're online. And funnily enough, it was a girl called Hannah whose sister had been baptised in that same pool, and was actually the previous person to be baptised, even though there was 3 years in between it.
Oh, right, because other baptisms...
But that's not because we haven't had baptisms for 3 years.
Both of us wanted to get in there and say, but wait.
But it was because we'd done all the other ones up at the school where we meet normally.
All the other ones.
So it was a baptistry pool.
It was a funny kind of juxtaposition of these sort of two people, but 3 years apart. And it was great to do that, but a little bit quirky because we're wearing masks and we can't sing. Mm. So it kind of pared it down to the essentials of, you know, the preached word, the kind of fellowship together, the communally kind of witnessing it, and the actual act of baptism, which thankfully we were allowed to do in a slightly different way. But the sermon was also quite a fascinating one, to me at least, the idea of the wisdom that's behind everything, the moral basis, the meaning basis, the creative power and the person all kind of being encapsulated in this idea of wisdom. So it was in God's goodness quite an interesting thing to preach on a day like that where you think that part of becoming a Christian is just recognising God for who he is as the source and the centre of wisdom and the need that we need to be delivered from evil, and that happens through Christ. So yeah, it was really, really great fun.
Great message when you got lots of visitors in the building as well, which was super exciting to have visitors back with us.
I bet that you thought it was nearly over, but we haven't started yet. It's just like on Sunday you thought we were done, but you still had communion left.
Duncan Forbes is a pastor on the Alton estate in London. He's a very educated man, I've found out, with a ministry degree, which has focused on sort of urban discipleship. And he's here to talk to us today about that and his experience in that. He runs something called Urban Ministries, which we'll learn about, I'm sure, as well, which is at its heart a resource to help Christians who work in those kind of urban areas and communities to help them out with their ministry. Duncan, thanks so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it. Maybe just as a sort of welcome and introduction to our listeners, just give us a snapshot of your sort of testimony and your ministries that you're working in now, if that's okay.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an honour to be here. So I grew up on the Alton estate in a single parent home, and I saw my mum turned to Jesus, and I saw her life change around. And we lived in poverty, but I saw my mum like praying, for sustenance, you know, like praying for food, praying for shoes for me, and then seeing God answer those prayers miraculously. So at a young age, I said to my mum, I said, Mum, I want Jesus in my heart too. Became a Christian, but also went through a lot of struggles in life and ended up going to a boarding school where I faced a lot of abuse and went through a very difficult period and didn't really have much support around me. But at the age of 18, had an amazing experience where it was kind of like I heard a voice in my head of God saying, I'm your father and I want to be your father. And I broke down and cried and kind of turned to God a second time. In a sense, I'm not saying I got converted a second time, but it was a turning back to God. And yet found that whereas a lot of my friends said when they became a Christian, they ended up being really happy and everything worked out really good for them. In my life, that wasn't the case. And one of the things that I did have to struggle with was PTSD, and went to a lot of church leaders over the years and asked for help with that, and found that a lot of people were quite clueless. And then also had a disability called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome that caused me a lot of difficulty. So all that to say was that turning to Jesus didn't mean that my life was suddenly hunky-dory and everything was great. Actually, everything was really tough. But I felt God put it on my heart that we needed a church on our council estate that communicated that Christ had died for all kinds of people, because that wasn't really the mentality in my neighborhood. It was more like, if you're a Christian, you're one of those prim and proper middle-class people. So set about to help with a church to be started, and did not want for a second to be the pastor of that church, but I was just trying to facilitate a church to be planted and get a team together and everything. And people kept saying, Duncan, you're the guy. And I kept saying, no, I'm not the guy. And by default, in the end, I ended up being the pastor of this church. And so we ended up having this small church on a big council estate, but that tries to communicate that Christ died for all kinds of people. And along that, with all the difficulties in my life, what I found was, whether it's been dealing with PTSD or if it's been dealing with my disability, which basically has me in pain 24/7 and extreme pain, what I found throughout it all is that God is so good, that he has been so faithful. He's brought me through everything. He's never abandoned me. And so, although everything didn't become hunky-dory, what I did find was that Jesus walked through all the painful experiences with me, and he's never left my side.
That's brilliant. That's really, really good to hear. Really interesting. Obviously, your passion is to reach anyone for Christ, but because of your particular ministry and location, there's a focus on what I think, having listened to you before, you would call working class people. I think there's some discussion about the best term, but to try and sort of use the term, is that a useful term to use?
Yeah, it's kind of like there is no useful term because every term is problematic. Sometimes I say lower classes, because then that also deals with the seven-tier system that people have started to use. You can talk about the lower ones. Also, working class these days has often been married up with the term white working class, which is quite a modern invention. And that's problematic right there. So sometimes I'll say lower classes, sometimes I'll say working class. Normally I have to give a caveat at the beginning to let people know, please don't be offended. There's always going to be some people that are offended. There's always going to be someone who sends a message later saying, aha, but I bet you didn't consider the guy who's working class but is actually almost a millionaire, you know. And it's like, well, no, obviously over the years we have looked at these things, but you've got to come up with some kind of term. So go with what's least offensive.
Amongst that group, I suppose that to benefit us, I suppose, and the wider church who might listen, what do you think we're not doing well, and then I'll ask you kind of what you think we could do better. So just to start in a way with the negative, we as Christchurch, and I'm sure many other church leaders that I network with, would in principle like to reach everyone with the gospel and would want to love everyone and to serve everyone and to preach to anyone. I'm sure their hearts are all right for that. I think in practice, a lot of our churches in our networks are not doing well reaching the lower classes. There are some exceptions, and there are exceptions in our church where we have kind of made some headway. But I suppose as a big statement, we're probably not doing that so well. Is that your observation? And can you kind of analyse a little bit why that's happening, do you think?
Yeah, I think it is a problem. I think there's exceptions, but they're exceptions that prove the rule. And I think fundamentally the problem that I think is the biggest obstacle in the UK is that we often miss out the need for repentance. So we often want to jump to what strategy have we got to do so we can reach more people. And we often don't stop to consider, in my heart, are there any prejudices towards the lower classes? And so then we learn some techniques from someone about how can we make our sermons more accessible to a wider group of people? How can we make our Sunday services more friendly to the lower classes? But we carry around these mindsets and these attitudes in our heart that spill out to the point that I would say that even I have friends who do council estate ministry, who are middle class cross-cultural ministers, and they do a great job. But in my conversation with them over the years, they will regularly offend me with saying classist things or acting a way that betrays classist attitudes. And these are the guys who are actually spending their lives working on council estates. So even the most clued up cross-cultural missionaries struggle with classism. I struggle with classism. I'm working class, but there's narratives in my head that I've been brainwashed with over the years that mean that even how I judge people based on their accent, on the clothes they wear, on their level of education, that impacts me. So I feel that the thing that's really missing is not technique or methodology as much as it is the willingness to say, in my heart, is there some prejudice? When I encounter someone from the lower classes, are there wrong thinking that goes on that I need to repent of and I need renewing of the mind of, so that I first and foremost see someone as someone made in the image of God? Someone who has intelligence, someone who has a voice that I should listen to, someone who has dignity that I should treat with dignity.
Do you think, just an example of that? You kind of said it to do with judging people on what they wear or their accent, but kind of examples of that what you called being classist, I think, where you've seen that.
Yeah, so I give an example from my own life. You know, I'm chatting to someone on my estate, and the way she speaks is not, you can tell she hasn't had elocution lessons. The way she speaks is more broken up than how a lot of people speak, and it's got a very thick working class accent. And I'm chatting to her, and in my mind, I'm thinking that she might not be very intelligent because of the way she speaks. And just as we're speaking, there's this beautiful sunset, and I'm like, look at that sunset, that's amazing. And she starts, in the way she talks, to break down the sunset and start explaining, yeah, look at those different types of blues going on there and how it's mingling with the yellows and the reds. And the way she described this sunset was so intelligent, but it didn't have the accent and the speech patterns to communicate that intelligence in a classist world. So that's an example of where I am being classist. I am judging someone based on class markers that I was trained in as a kid. Yeah. And, you know, I had people make fun of me because my accent. I changed my accent when I was in school because of judgments people made about my accent. I changed my accent for a job I had. I did my public schoolboy accent for a year at a job I had. And as soon as, you know, 5 o'clock was finished, I left the office, I went back to my London accent. So that's an example from my own life. But I've also seen examples from how other people have treated me or other people treated other people, where I don't want to give too many examples because there's so many people that get offended. But for example, I turned up at a conference once and I turned up in a hoodie and jeans, and everyone else there kind of like had the cufflinks and the chinos and the blazers and everything. And people were just rude to me. Like, I tried to greet people and be friendly, and people pretty much turned their backs to me and they weren't interested at all. And it was a horrible experience. Day two of the conference, someone discovered that I taught Greek, and suddenly people are interested in me. And suddenly people are like, do you teach Greek? That's fantastic. And suddenly I was a person of worth. But when I walked in the doors earlier, I didn't have worth. Even though I'm an image bearer, I had the class markers that communicated I didn't have value.
Did you want to explore that at all, Josh, or should we?
I wanted to ask a question that's kind of related to something you were talking about earlier, Duncan, which is essentially what your thoughts are on whether it's possible for churches, just, and it's very hard to sort of say for churches because that's too broad, isn't it? It's like such a big rubber stamp. But like, is it possible for churches to target all people, by which I mean people of all social class, across sort of cultural divides? Or are those divides too large, and is it problematic in terms of evangelistic techniques and church ministries, which at the end of the day are limited by resources of a church? They can only do so many things, right? So is it possible for churches to target all people, or is it more necessary that we have churches that are dedicated to targeting certain groups of people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in terms of the possibility aspect, I think if we take in the New Testament where the Jew and Gentile divide is crossed in the church at Ephesus, if that divide could have been crossed, then yes, it's definitely possible to reach all types of people. In terms of strategies, I think that if a church could start with a strategy to reach a certain type of people, so for example, on our estate, we were initially trying to reach people who were like born and raised on the estate because we saw they were a group that had been overlooked.
Yeah.
But I think if you're holding on to the gospel and if you're letting the gospel have its outworkings into every area of life, once you've planted the church and got going, it's hard to actually maintain that homogenous unit unless you are actually either unwittingly putting up walls, or if you're just consistently saying, no, we only want to reach this type of people. Because the world we live in is a multi-class, multicultural world. So no matter how homogenous your church is, in the workplace, people are meeting people who are different to them.
Yeah.
And so it's a bit unnatural then if in our church life, it's totally homogenous. And what we found is that you can have a heart for a sort of special interest group, but as you start meeting people, as the gospel starts softening your heart, you start to naturally get a heart for everyone you see. And you want to hold out the gospel to them. And you don't want to be like the Levite or the priest who stays on your side of the road. You want to cross over and help people. So I think to be consistent with the gospel, we should all find ourselves becoming more and more wanting to reach other types of people and more flexing and adapting the ways we do things so that we make people welcome and the gospel more accessible.
So that's really helpful. You mentioned the heart in terms of repenting of classism. Is there more that we're doing wrong as well, though? Which I don't want to just say, you know, what button do we need to push to do it better? But are there other things as well as having a heart attitude that's wrong that we're actually just doing in terms of what we do, how we explain the kinds of ministries we run, the intellectual sort of snobbery of, I don't know, the conceptual way we speak or something that's maybe not best?
Sure. I mean, there's so much in it. There's, I guess, one way you could look at it is the relationships that are going on in the church. And another way you can look at it is the actual Sunday service, the way that the Sunday service functions. Probably the easiest one to approach is the Sunday service. I think a lot of our preaching is targeted to middle class culture. I think that's problematic. I think it tends to be very fitting with tertiary educated middle class people. But if we were to use Jesus as the benchmark, as the perfect image of God, and look at his preaching, let's face it, his preaching is very, very different style to how most of our preaching is on a Sunday morning. And I think what that shows us is that we just want to be careful about continually keeping to this certain model we have that we assume is the biblical method of teaching, which actually is very middle class, tertiary educated model of teaching. And, you know, St. Augustine talked about your preaching, about if you want to open a wooden lock, you use a wooden key. And if you want to open a golden lock, you use a golden key. And the same way with our preaching, whose hearts do we want to unlock? If we only preach in a middle class way, then we're only, all things being equal, we're only going to open middle class hearts. Obviously, God can do what he wants with his sovereignty, but we know that in his sovereignty, he uses means. So let's open up the preaching style so that it reaches a broader base.
That's really helpful. What about relationships? Sorry, Mark, because that might relate to, you know, me and Mark are preachers. Some of the people who listen to this will not be preachers, quite a lot of them, really. So in terms of relationship, Josh, for example. Mm.
Yeah. Josh, what are you drinking?
Oh, it's just squash, man. It's peach squash, but it's delicious.
Okay. That looks terrible.
Does it? No, it's tasty.
It looks like it's very healthy.
That's Josh.
Not sure it is.
So in terms of relationships, I think there's a few things to watch out for. One is for us to be mindful that we have narratives of people that we've been sold over the years that get in the way of our relationships. So we have the narrative of the person who's lazy and is dependent on benefits. And some of the people who hold these narratives sometimes forget that they are dependent on child benefit themselves, and sometimes forget that there was a period in their life where they were dependent on benefits for 6 months. And when you ask them about it, they say, oh, but it was only temporary. And not realizing that these narratives about working class people are often quite fluid as well. Most people, when they're on benefits, it is just temporary. It's not lifelong. And there's been a stream of these TV shows, which some people call poverty porn, you know, which are intentionally putting out a stereotype of what people are like, which means that when you visit a church and get in a relationship with someone, these narratives spill out. So for example, I can have a conversation with someone and tell them about some of the classism I experienced from my teachers in school. And straight away, the person can respond and say, oh, I'm sure you just misunderstood them. I'm sure it was just a case that the teacher had your best needs at heart and they knew you just needed to knuckle down and, you know, that kind of thing. And if I hear that, but then hear them talk to their other friend from the middle classes who talks about how they got a parking ticket and it was so unfair, and if straight away they sympathize with them and say, oh, I know they're monsters, then then that impacts my relationship with them, because I'm like, oh, we've got different rules for the relationship. And I think a lot of lower class people are used to having their voice not heard. And so when they come into the church, it's so important that in their relationships that people will actually listen to them and hear them and understand them and even be prepared to be re-educated in their understanding of where these people come from and avoid the, you know, we have this term now, mansplaining, when men will explain to a woman something in condescending terms when she already totally understands the concept. And there is such a thing, I think, of middle-class mansplaining, which, you know, I've been in situations where some of my middle-class friends will start explaining to me about my own culture and about council estate life, even though they've never lived on a council estate. And I can handle it. And I'm kind of used to it. I realize that's part of living in Britain, that part of being middle class is to be the expert. And so I understand that. But what we're talking about here is how do we do relationships for the non-Christian lower class man who walks in? You know, if his first impression of people is they start explaining to him what his life is like and why it's like that, he's not going to feel like he's loved and accepted and that this is a safe environment for him to be himself, which really the church of all places should be that place.
It just struck me as you were talking there, like in terms of how do I have those conversations without coming across as patronising or condescending? You know, like we want to have those conversations. Presumably there's got to be a sense of a friendship where I can ask those kind of questions, or, you know, in terms of what's life like, what does it feel like, you know, how do I do that without kind of looking like a, you know, jumped up middle class kind of, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. There's always that fear that if we ask people a lot of questions that it will be unnatural and stuff. I think the key thing is love, and this is why I say it starts with repentance. Because if the prejudice goes, and if it's replaced with the love of Christ, then the way we ask people questions, the way we talk to people, will have a certain tincture that I can never say that word right, but you know, that tainting of the gospel. And we had a bloke visit our church. I won't say his name, but you'd know him. He's very posh and he's written a lot of books and taught on a training program for preaching. And he visited our church, and after the service and in the tea break, he just went around everyone listening to them. It was beautiful to watch. Here was one of the poshest blokes who's ever been to our church, going around having tea and biscuits with people. Just, and then we have a meal at the end of the service, having a meal with people and just listening to people. And he hardly did any talking. He was just listening to people, letting them dictate the conversation. So he wasn't interrogating them. I've made that mistake before. In the early days, I was doing, you know, trying to do friendship evangelism in the pub. And I asked someone loads of questions about themselves. And straight away, they were like, are you a copper or something? And like the whole pub turned and looked at me. And I thought, okay, the whole question thing like is a bit dicey. But people like to talk about themselves often, if they feel comfortable. And if you let people lead the conversation and you just listen and you just admire them for being made in the image of God and using the voice that God's given and let them guide the conversation, you will then learn a lot about them and start to build a friendship with them. And that love and humility in conversation can really help to bridge the gap between the classes.
Is there anything else in terms of the people in our church? Because you know, although you have a particular ministry, most towns have what were council estates that are now kind of housing association run sort of areas. So, you know, we have just around where our church is 2,000 housing association houses here in Haywards Heath. And I'm sure that's the same of most sort of medium-sized towns. And that it's always a challenge. You know, in God's goodness, we have made connections with quite a lot of people who live in the locale. But it's always a challenge just in terms of getting the relationship in the first place. So it's not even getting to the stage of relating and welcoming and preaching well in a way that's accessible and so on. But sometimes it's just there's no actual overlap. You know, I'm sometimes walking past people near where I live, just outside the window here, and I'm thinking, you know, quite a lot I know in my street, but others who pass by, and I think there's not an easy connection point unless I actually stop them in the street and, you know, block their path. Our worlds are not crossing. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
We're
kind of near the end, so we've got to wrap up in a couple of minutes, but just any other sort of final thoughts on that?
That's a great point. I think it's worth getting out a bit of paper, getting people's heads together and working out what are all the points of contact that we have and are they helpful for meeting people from different classes, and what are the other points of contact, you know, like at the Leisure Centre in Haywards Heath, is there some five-a-side football we can get involved in or something, you know? Can we make friends with the person who runs, I don't know if it's still there, the Great Wall of China? You know, and you know, the takeout that used to be there. I used to live in Haywards Heath for a bit. And can we ask them to start promoting an alpha course or whatever, the exploring Christianity, and intentionally start broadening out the points of contact. And then once you've got that, because I just want to get this in before we finish. I think it's crucial that you have people from different classes who are empowered in the church, that they can use their voice to share about ways that the service and the outreach and everything can be more friendly to their friends and neighbours.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Just before we end, any things that we could particularly pray for you, Duncan, when people listen and think of you, what can they pray about for you?
That's great. Thank you. I think maybe one of the biggest things is trying to learn how to speak about these ways in a prophetic way, but a gracious way at the same time. That's a question I've had for a few years now, is when you've got to speak about challenging stuff, how can we do it with grace? I would really appreciate prayer for that.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time, Duncan. It's been lovely to hear from you. If we get questions from our listeners, which we sometimes do, and we don't know how to answer them, can we send them to you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it'd be good to hear from you.
That'd be good. So you can email us on ordinary@cch.org.uk if you have questions, and we can pass you on to Duncan if we don't know how to answer them. But for now, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Ordinary. Thoughts, as always, are welcome, so do get in touch. And come back next week, there'll be another brand new episode of Ordinary. See you next time.